There's an old saying that I have found constantly, relevant or repeating itself in my experience of myself and in my experience of people. And that's a saying that goes, God made us in His image and likeness, and we have never ceased returning the favor. God made us in His image and likeness, and we have never ceased returning the favor. Why do I say that? Because in my experience of myself and my experience of others as a priest in these last 40 years, what I find is that most of us are having a relationship with an image of God that is way too little, and that we project to God an image of what we would consider the best, probably, of ourselves. So we idealize ourselves and we say, God must be this, and you imagine Him. The problem, of course, is that God is not what you imagine Him to be. He never fits into your image. Your image, there's a field in theology, which I very much enjoy, which is making the distinction. I'm going to use two words that are not normal, okay? So if you want to remember them, they're interesting words. In theology, there is what's called apophatic and cataphatic theology. Now, those are just big words. But apophatic, by the way, the prefix apo is to turn away. For example, we use the prefix apo when you use the word apologize. It's apo and logize, words to turn away blame or guilt. Or apostles, to send away, apo and, which is away, and stelane, to send. And so apophatic is the theology that says that anytime you say anything about God, as much as you need to say about God, because we need to use our heads when we think of God, never take what you say as the way God is. Never mistake the image of God in your head for the real God. The best that you can hope for is that God, that the image in your head is like a road sign. My favorite example of this is this example. Imagine you're riding and you're driving a car inside of the car, and you're way outside of Houston, and you have found in some deserted island a guy that has never been off and has never seen a brand new city, a city, and has lived isolated. And you have him in the car, and you're driving along, and you're telling him of how big Houston is. And the guy's going, oh, wow, okay. And then as you're driving in the middle of nowhere, he says, stop the car, stop the car. And you stop the car because you don't know what's going on. And you stop the car, get out of the car, and then he's walking back to a pole. And on the pole, it says Houston, and it has an arrow. And he looks up at the pole, and he looks at you, and he says, it's not as big as you said. Now, what's the mistake? The mistake is he's taking the sign to be the reality. The sign is never, all the sign does is it has an arrow and it points you in the general direction. And you know that if you follow that road, even though you cannot see it, you will run into Houston. whenever you do theology or religious thought, you always have to remember that any image of God, which is what's called the cataphatic, meaning that we need images, but every image should be apophatic, meaning it has to remain only an image, only a sign of who the real God is. Don't confuse the real God for your head image of Him. Now, why is that important, especially today? Because today, we focus on the mercy of God. And when, in my experience, a lot of people, and I mean a lot, spend time, especially when they experience themselves as having done something that they feel really bad about, or they're remembering something that happened many years ago. And I hear it when people come to confession. They will confess, for example, Father, they say stuff like this. Father, I've said this before, but I need to say it again. And I often just stop them. And I say, why? Well, and something like this I get. Well, it's just that I still feel guilty. It's just that I don't feel forgiven. And I still have to think about it. And so notice what they're doing. What they're saying is, God's forgiveness should have changed my feelings. And since most of us in the United States and in Western world, we identify ourselves with how we feel. You know, that's why, you know, people are always talking about, well, if you're going, you have to be honest. Now, are we against honesty? No. But notice what comes next. What do you feel? As if that's the center of you. The way that you feel is, that's bunk. That comes leftover from Freud. And what basically the tradition of humanity, not just the church, the humanity, is that the center of you is your convictions, your decisions, what you stand by, not the way you happen to feel at any given moment. And so when people come to confession, they don't feel forgiven, or they still feel, oh, if something is wrong and it's bothering me because it keeps coming up in my mind. And so literally I stop them. I say, stop it. Because what you're asking me to do by forgiving you again is to join you in the sin, and I call it a sin, of not trusting God's mercy, of not trusting God's forgiveness. What you're saying is you trust your feelings of guilt more than God's forgiveness through the sacrament of reconciliation. If you went into confession and you experienced the sacrament of reconciliation, I don't care if you forgot something super important. If you were genuine and sincere at that moment, God's forgiveness is entire. It's not about God only forgives what you confessed. Now, again, you gotta be sincere. If you forgot something, that's fine. Everything is forgotten. Everything is forgiven. You can't be like my sister. My sister, Elena, she's my younger sister by six. We're three. I'm the oldest, prettiest, got the best DNA. I always tell my brothers and sisters that they got leftover DNA. My sister used to do this, and she confessed it, told me later. She said when she was a little girl, she would go to confession. But she didn't want to tell the priest. And so she would lie to the priest in confession. But you know how she did it? This is brilliant. She kept track while she was going to confession of the number of lies that she was telling the priest. And then she would confess lying last and include all the lies that she had told the priest. I thought that was, it's pretty ingenious, you know? But that's not it. That's not it. The whole point is that God's, see, we tend, because we are feeling, focused on feelings, whenever we don't feel a particular way, we think that that means that the reality of what we're hoping to feel is gone. I constantly talk about this when I'm at weddings. Because in weddings we talk about, I'm in love with you. I've fallen in love with you. And I always ask couples, why do you think we use the verb to fall? Have you ever thought about that? Why is it that we just don't say, you look at the person you love and you go, oh, sweetie, I ran into love with you. You could even go all the way. You could say, you drove me nuts. I jumped into love with you. No, I fell. I'm so sorry. I fell. Why? Because people are talking about their feelings. And we think love is a feeling. And it's not. It's not a feeling. Love, feelings are sometimes the echoes of different types of love. But our teacher taught us. You know who our teacher is? Guy behind me? Okay? Our teacher taught us. He said, love one another, and he didn't leave it there. He said, as I have loved you. If they're in the dictionary, the word love should have a picture of Jesus next to it in the definition. Why? And again, I use this at weddings because I'm talking about love. And I tell people, and this is the definition of love that Christians operate on. What did Jesus do when he was on the cross? Right before he died, he looked up at his Father and he said, Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. Now, I would focus you because that is the definition of love right there. In action. First of all, do you notice how Jesus does not forgive us directly? I always find that amazing. Because direct forgiveness would have been, I forgive you. Period. Between him and us. Who is Jesus talking to? He's talking to his Father. And what is he talking about? He's talking about us. He's caring about us with his Father. And that's what love is. Now, this is my best definition of love, drawn from that. Love, at its core, is the decision to unite yourself with God in caring for another, no matter how you feel. Love at its core is the decision to unite yourself with God in caring for another, no matter how you feel. Every time you have a relationship with God, or with other people, but with God especially, whenever you feel sinful, or whenever you feel like guilty, or you've done something horrible, or you just are bothered by guilt, be careful. Because what the power of evil wants to do is it wants you to understand, try to make you believe that the way you feel guilty is the way God is towards you. And that is the lie. Because you see, what he said on the cross, listen, look at what people were doing to him. Don't you think the disciples, I mean, they ran away and people were just freaking out. And when Jesus sees them again, don't you think they would have felt guilty? Peter said, I'll die with you, Lord, no matter what. Yeah, yeah. And he was the first one to check out. I'll tell you what. If I did that to anybody, I wouldn't want to see him again. I'd be so dad burned embarrassed at my conduct that I don't want to see him again. But when Jesus appears to them, the apostles, I can just imagine, the apostles must have been, oh God, here we go. Here we go. They were expecting your lecture. You call yourself my friends and look what you did to me. That would have been normal. What's Jesus' words to them? Peace. Peace be with you. He doesn't even mention it. Doesn't even mention it. And what was he doing on the cross? He wasn't even angry at those people. Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. So what's the whole issue here? Divine mercy. God is greater than your feelings. God is greater than your image of him. Don't walk around thinking, because I'm an SOB. Okay? SOB stands for super obstinate person. I can't help what you're thinking. Okay. Because I'm an SOB, okay, God must hate me. First of all, calling yourself something like that is not the way God sees you. Just because you see yourself as a horrible person, don't put that on God. He's not seeing you as a horrible person, which is part of the problem. You know what part of the problem is? That you think God should see you that way. If he really knew me, he would know that I'm a horrible person. And the point is, he really does know you. And he knows you better than you know yourself. And you're not a horrible person, and he loves you even as screwed up as you are. And inside you're going, but I don't deserve it. Exactly. Because notice what's happening. What you are doing is you are trading God. Basically, this is what you're saying. If I were God, I would not accept me. But you're not God. And the problem is, what did I say at the beginning? God made us in his image and likeness, and we have never ceased returning the favor. We do that to God. And then we either condemn ourselves or we condemn others. That's not Christian. That is not Christian. And believe me, sometimes people do that with super pious. They're super pious. And that is a heresy in the church. In the church, there is a heresy that was very popular in the 18th and 19th century called Jansenism. And you can look it up. Look up Jansenism. And it's the heresy that accentuates the negative, that accentuates human depravity, and that you're not worthy, and that there's no way that you can come to God and be acceptable to him. That's why when people tell me, you know, that, well, Father, I just don't go to communion because I just had a fight with my husband. So, you had a fight with your husband, God, that's when you most need to go to communion. I mean, this one exactly when you, or I don't feel worthy. Well, you're not. God, I have to celebrate Mass, and sometimes I'm amazed and thankful that God doesn't strike me down with a lightning bolt. Because he knows me, and he knows Mario is not a super fantastic person. I try to do decent work, but I screw up constantly. And so what happens? You always have to focus on God's mercy. Stop this useless time, especially right after you commit a sin and you feel bad. Okay, that's cool. Feel bad. Time it. 30 seconds. Feel bad? Okay, here we go. Feel bad. Beat self. Beat self. Beat self. Keep your watch. Beat self. Beat self. Beat self. Horrible person. But after 30 seconds, you turn to God and say, your mercy is greater than my guilt. I choose to focus on your mercy and not on my guilt. That's the real God. I was talking recently to a good friend of mine who was dying. Literally, hospice was with him. And his name was Gene. And he knew he was dying. And he said to me, you know, I'm looking back over all the sins of my past life, and I never cease asking God, telling him I'm sorry. I keep on repeating how sorry I am, how sorry I am. And he was doing that as he was dying. And I said to him, Gene, why don't you do something different? Why don't you look at God and say, help me to focus and trust more in your mercy than on my own guilt. I trust your mercy more than my guilt. Because that's the way it's supposed to be. It's not supposed to be you and I flogging ourselves. Catholicism is not supposed to be rules that make you feel guilty. Yes, the rules are there. Yes, sin is there. But it's meant to make you turn to God and focus on his mercy, not for you to spend time beating yourself for what you've done. Let me close with this. One of my favorite things that I learned is why we have a crucifix in Catholic churches. I repeat this periodically, because if any of you ever go to a Protestant church, what you're going to see is an empty cross. And the other day, when we had the ecumenical service here for Good Friday, and we had several Protestant pastors, I had one lady, it was a service of all kinds of different Christians. And I had one lady afterwards came up to me and she says, why do you still have him on the cross? He's risen. Do you Catholics like to see Jesus suffer? I said, no. The reason we have him on the cross is because mercy. You see, the greatest revelation of all humankind, of all history, is the identity of God. In the ancient world, nobody thought that God was love. Nobody. Everybody thought that God or the gods were crazy people, and whenever you had to do something that they covered on their domain, you had to sacrifice to them, otherwise they could kill you. For example, seafarers who were going to go on a trip in the sea, sailors, they would make sacrifices to Neptune because they were thinking, oh, Neptune, you are the god of the sea, and we're about to trample on your territory. Please excuse us. Here is a goat that we are giving to you, or a human that we are sacrificing to you. Be pleased to allow us to cross your domain. Is that God love? No. And so the moment when Jesus dies and he says, Father, forgive them, they don't know what they're doing. For the first time in human history, we knew who God was. You can push him to the end and he still forgives you. And that's nuts. That's what you can't believe and I can't believe. That there is a God who isn't like you or isn't like me. So today, it's important that we celebrate the divine mercy of the Lord. It's probably the teaching of the church that is least believed. Not, we don't say we don't believe in God's mercy. By the way, we act. Because we think God's like us. And if God would see what I've done, he, since he's like me, I wouldn't forgive me. And neither would he. Wrong. You still, your God is this big. And you need to quit that. Quit that. And it's hard. Because we always think we should deserve. Americans, we ought to deserve what we get. I work hard, therefore I deserve it. And when it comes to sanctity, it's me. Why do you think they call it saved? It's because you're screwed up and there's no way you can do it any other way. God has to do it. If you try to save yourself, you are in hot water deeper than you think you are. You are totally screwed up, and all that we try is to do is to ask for God's mercy. That's why he's on the cross right there. Because it's a reminder of who he is, that he is divine mercy, a thing that nobody in the history of humanity could have ever dreamt. And we have him up there to remind us that he is constant forgiveness, even though we really can't believe it. He'd have to be stupid. Well, I guess God is stupid. Because he's constant forgiveness, constant mercy. God bless, and thanks for listening to me.